Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
And welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and joining me on today's podcast is director-producer Aaron Kuntz, who we chat to about the anthology feature Scare Package, which he both produced and directed the wraparound story for. Over the course of the interview, he talks to us about how he came up with the concept for the anthology, how he was nervous about doing an anthology feature in the first place, and how he managed to corral his roster of directors for the other stories. Plus, how he was excited about getting Joe Broadbriggs to cameo in the film. Also, we get into his next feature, the horror western The Pale Door, and a little bit about Scare Package 2, which will be wonderfully titled Too Scared, Too Packaged, as well as a whole lot more in the interview that awaits you. But before we get to the interview, I just want to quickly remind you, the best way you can support New Horror Express is to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. But now, on to the interview with Aaron. Hi, Aaron. Good to have you on the show.
Hey, pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we're here to talk about, well, first of all, Scare Package. Can you tell us for the listeners a little bit about Scare Package? Just a quick synopsis, just to sum up what Scare Package is all about.
Sure. So Scare Package is a horror comedy anthology that is kind of the anthology that makes fun of anthologies in a way, while also hugging it at the same time. And it's based on each segment is a different horror trope that we are subverting, kind of poking fun at. And then it all kind of wraps around with the central story of a man who's onboarding someone at a VHS rental store and teaching him the rules of horror. And but it's all horror comedy. It's all meta. It's all over the top and pretty ridiculous.
And where did the initial idea for the film come from? How did you come up with that concept that you wanted to do, like targeting horror cliches, horror tropes?
Yes. So my writing partner and one of the producers at my company, Paper Street Pictures, Cameron Burns, had been pushing for a while for us to do an anthology. And I honestly, I didn't want to do one because I just thought that, you know, what had happened with like VHS and Southbound and ABCs of Death. And there were so many anthologies that were out there now that were fantastic. And I mean, I think VHS 2 and Southbound are two of my favorites of all time. And those came out recently. And I was like, well, I don't really know what we have to add to the genre. But he kept pushing me because we've gotten to know so many filmmakers over the years that we just wanted an excuse to work with. And I spent a weekend, I was like, okay, look, let me seriously consider this. If we're going to do it, it has to be different. It can't just be another horror anthology. It's got to have a hook to it. There's got to be cohesiveness. And I watched every horror anthology I could find, which was a lot of fun because I love them. And kind of, I'm a little OCD, and I took a spreadsheet and kind of broke down how each one should be, the pluses and minuses, what I really liked about anthologies, what were my concerns, and then kind of came together with a game plan that was, you know, still achievable within, you know, a limited budget that we would have that we think could be effective. And we came up with, at the time, it was called tropes. And I just realized that my favorites were a lot of the comedies. And I hadn't seen an anthology that was all horror comedy. You know, I had seen one that leaned that way a little bit, but it still was kind of there. And then the other thing was we wanted something that felt in the same world, but still could allow for unique visions and, craft to come through. So it just couldn't feel like it was, you know, 5 to 10 shorts thrown together. It had to feel like this was all coming through a cohesive vision and story. So yeah, we came up with that concept, Cameron and I, and then we were off and running at the end of 2018 is when we first started.
Yeah, why do you think that is? Like, obviously, anthology pictures have always been popular in horror. There's been various spurts of anthology pictures having a popularity. Kind of died down in the 90s and 2000s, but obviously post-VHS, they've really, in the last decade, there was so many anthologies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I'm friends with a lot of the folks that made VHS, and I know that, I mean, that kind of came together accidentally, you know. Adam Wingard had shot this wraparound segment, and they didn't really know what to do with it. And then they just wanted to get their friends together, and it was something they could do very inexpensively and just kind of create this like fake, you know, I can't remember the term, like the 8mm type video, you know, snuff films, like these kind of like fake snuff films that they found at this house. And he thought would be a lot of fun. And it was like Miska and Simon and all them, Simon Barrett and all them, that kind of put this idea together. And I mean, that movie just was so successful. I mean, I think that's probably the biggest reason is that VHS, VHS2, ABCs of Death all made a lot of money. And even Holidays, you know, sold to Netflix for a good amount. And so I think people realized there was a market for it. And then, you know, one of the things, I mean, personally, I think that the horror community is, and all of us as fellow horror directors, like we're all friends. We all support each other. We all love each other. It really is a very tight-knit group. And this just gives you a reason to work with people you never would, you know? So you have other directors that, you know, it's like, when are these other directors going to be on the same thing together? And that's rare, if ever. And this becomes opportunities to work with like-minded folks and to get your friends together and make something that, you know, audiences, you know, had been looking for. And I think, you know, when we came in, I thought the resurgence had kind of hit its peak. And that's why I was apprehensive about coming back into the market with it. But once we settled on this kind of like fun way of doing it that was very meta, I thought it became something that we could capitalize on. Capitalize is the wrong word. It's like have fun doing, I think, is a better way of phrasing it, because that's really what this was all about.
And in terms of like, once you were up and running, how quickly did things come together? Like, was it a long process picking the other directors? What was the process like for that?
Well, before I got the funding, we were kind of putting together our list. So we came up with the concept. We had a kind of a wraparound story, although that ended up changing. And then we had a list of directors. There were about, I don't know, probably 20 or so directors that, you know, we were going to whittle this down from. And at first we thought it was going to come together pretty quickly, but it ended up taking a long time, mainly because a lot of the directors are just very good at what they do and are in demand. So we lost multiple directors who were going to do features. And I mean, Emily Higgins, who did our cold open, which is called cold open, that's about cold opens, which kind of tells you what you need to know about the film on itself. She was in to do a segment, then had to leave because she was doing a project. Then another person came in and took her spot, but then that person had to leave to do a feature. And when that person left, Emily came back in and filled that spot. So there was a lot of juggling that kind of happened and kind of getting the schedules. Cause one of the rules that we had was we were never going to do two segments at once. It was going to be one segment, kind of get it further along, see what that looks like, understand how that works, and then push and then get the crew together and do the next segment, like one at a time. So we didn't have, even though there are multiple directors, we wanted to have kind of like a show running, you know, way of doing this where it was like episodic and we could keep some cohesiveness between what was going on. So
how much in terms of like the roster of filmmakers, like, did they just kind of go away and do their own thing and come back to you with what they had? Like, because obviously, like you said, you know, there is this thing where it's set in this one world, and there is a kind of greater continuity to it than a lot of anthologies. So how collaborative was it? How much were the filmmakers in contact with you, with each other?
Yeah, so we were in constant contact with the filmmakers. And in the majority of all situations, there might have, I think only Anthony Cousin's segment in Minnesota, did we not have a representative from my company on set working with them. So that was kind of producing it day to day. That was the one where we kind of let him kind of go on his own. But it was a green light process. So we gave them a list of tropes that we wanted them to kind of look at. And then, you know, said, hey, like expand on this, but submit ideas. They would submit ideas to us. We rejected a number that we just didn't think either fit or were too similar to something else somebody else was doing or whatever. And then, you know, we whittled it down, figured out what we could do within the budget, offered up to them, you know, all the support that we had. And then we would either produce it with them or, you know, empower their producers with everything that was needed. And then they would deliver to us essentially a locked picture. And then in the post process, we supplied the sound design, we supplied the, you know, the composer, we supplied the colorist, the finishing, all of that. And then my editor, because I directed about, you know, 40% of the movie, my editor also, like, you know, cut all those together. So it was definitely a very collaborative process. It was something that we were working with throughout this entire situation. And, you know, because we knew what we wanted. This was kind of a specific ask. Like I said, it couldn't be something that was as simple as, you know, hey, go do what you want to do. You know, but they could still do what they wanted within the world and the parameters that we had given them.
Because, like, obviously some of the shorts seem very close to the world you create in the wraparound, particularly Cold Open, which you mentioned, which directly crosses over into your wraparound.
Well, and that's because so I wrote and directed and then the wrap and then the ending. Mm-hmm. And we waited to do those because we wanted to see how these segments came together. And that was one of the best parts of making this, was that because it was myself doing the end, we could customize around our shorts. So Emily, you know, came up with Cold Open. We read the script and then we loved it. We're like, well, this clearly has to be our cold open because it's about it. So it, you know, we need to be self-referential here. So once we knew that had to be the cold open of the film, then it became, well, we need to now incorporate this. So that's when we decided to you know, make that happen. And I was able to shoot that later so that we could, you know, seamlessly tie everything together. And the way we go in and out of each segment too was curated around the ending of those. And sometimes we told people, like, hey, what is your ending shot? You know, if you could end with something like this, we could incorporate it in this clever way. So we came up with things like that too, because again, we just wanted it to all feel, even if the segment felt a little different, we wanted the way it tied back into the main story just to feel like we were holding your hand throughout that entire process.
And why did you pick the cliche that you did? The ending, you know, like the ending story, and how quickly did that kind of come about in terms of writing it?
The central story, just knowing that it was going to be at a video store, just made a lot of sense to start there. But going into, you know, Horror Hypothesis or the final segment that I did, you know, I mean, it's the slasher segment, you know, I mean, that's what I wanted to do the most. I have, you know, a Friday the 13th tattoo. I wanted to have the big lumbering killer and, you know, to really go with it. I mean, that's what I grew up on. It's what I know the most. It's what, you know, I can talk about probably the most intelligently, which is that whole slasher genre, subgenre, whatever you want to call it. And so that was just going to be a lot of fun. And then once we had this concept of, you know, these people doing experiments on a killer in order to understand why things happen in movies the way they do, like the fact that, you know, he could be walking and this woman's running, yet he's catching up with her. And the fact that cell phones stop working, cars stop starting, you know, and all of these, somebody puts on a mask and they can see better, like all these weird things that somehow happen. in horror movies that we just kind of, you know, take as part of that canon, part of that world, and we're willing to go with it. That was a fun thing to like bring those into a quote unquote real world scenario. And it allowed us to speak about the stereotypes. And I think that was fun. You know, that was something I wanted to do. I wanted to talk about what the stereotypes were and how we could subvert those stereotypes. And like, what is a final girl, you know, and what is the stoner, and what are these people, and how we could take those and turn them on their heads to have fun with it. And that became kind of a no-brainer. So we wrote that one pretty early. And when people came up with more of a slasher type thing, unless it was a specific hook, kind of like Anthony Cousins has a slasher, but his was a very specific thing about the killer that won't die. And even though we touched on that a little bit, we felt like those were different enough. Mm-hmm. But we kind of crossed that one off the list pretty early because we knew it's what we wanted to do. And so I selfishly took it right off the bat.
And from kind of like script to like going into production, shooting, how quick was that process?
So we shot the ending segment a little sooner than, the last thing we shot was the wraparound. Because again, we customized that to have every segment done so we could finesse that in the right way. We always knew that the wraparound would seamlessly lead into the final segment. So we had to kind of plan that out a little bit. I want to say we wrote that in the summer, you know, like spring or so. I apologize. We wrote that at the end of 2018. And then we waited to shoot it because there was some opportunity with some locations and stuff that we wanted. Fear of the Walking Dead, I live in Austin, Texas, and Fear of the Walking Dead had been shooting there, and there was a hiatus when they weren't shooting, and they had destroyed this hospital. And we knew we could use that set if we shot in that time frame. So that was something that we wanted to shoot for. And we're really glad we did, because it just gave us so much production value. So we waited to do that until August of 2018. Yeah.
I was wanting to ask about the cast as well. How quickly did you assemble the cast, and what made you decide on Jeremy King as Chad? He's very entertaining as Chad.
I'll have to tell him you said that. So my first feature film was Camera Obscura, and we had a character that was named Tad Buckley in that, and he owned a hardware store, and he just was hilarious, and we couldn't put in all the ridiculous stuff he was doing. So this person is actually Chad Buckley. It's all in the same universe that I'm doing, just in a fun way that nobody will get because nobody's seen Camera Obscura. So, but I had worked with Jeremy, 20 years ago on a short film where he played a bike cop that I was producing, and he came in and just cracked us up. We were dying laughing. And then cut to, 10 years or so later, we were making short films, and I made a really silly short film about my pug that turns into a chupacabra. It's not good, but he was really funny in it. And so we wrote this around him. I mean, he was who I knew was going to be the person doing this the whole time. Just because I know his sense of humor, I know the way that he works, I know we just kind of understand each other's timing. And so he was one of the first people, you know, that I knew was going to be the case. It's funny, you know, Jeremy is always, he's a serious actor to everyone else in the world, but to me, he's just hilarious. So I just keep casting him in these funny roles, and I'm hoping more people finally give him those roles because he's really good at it. But he keeps getting cast as like serious leading man stuff, and I mean, I'm sure, you know, he's great there too, but he's really good with comedic timing. So yeah, I love Jeremy, known him for forever. So that was kind of a gimme. As far as the others, I mean, Noah Segan, he came in as a director for his segment, but I've known Noah. He was also on Camera Obscura. I was a producer on Starry Eyes, and Noah, I met him through that the first time. And then,
first in this project before being... And
I'm sorry, say that again?
So did you picked him as one of the directors?
Yeah, I picked Noah as one of the directors because, well, first off, Noah and I have become good friends over the years. He's one of my favorite people, love him to death. And just after Starry Eyes and Camera Obscura, we had worked together. We've been reading each other's scripts for a long time. I knew that he wanted to direct. He's got a feature that he's trying to get off the ground now that I'm actually helping with. So we knew this was going to happen. So it was like, well, let's start here. You know, this is a great kind of get your feet wet directing opportunity. And I knew he'd kill it, and I knew he'd bring some amazing people. So he brought all these great comedians in to help with it. Also got like Jocelyn DeBauer from Greener Grass in it and stuff too. It's just great, great group. So I knew that was going to be the case. And then I selfishly wanted Noah to act in it too, because I love him as an actor, of course, because he's in everything. I mean, literally, he's in everything I do so far, at least as a feature. So, so he was a shoo-in. That made a lot of sense. And then you were asking about the actors that we had had in our segment. Another one was Chase Williamson. Chase and I met prior to Camera Obscura as well. My first feature, he was in that as well as a small part. So I wanted to bring him back. I knew, you know, that was somebody I'd known again for a long time. I just basically texted him, was like, dude, I want you to be a stoner in this movie. I know you play a stoner a lot, but this one's really for you. And he said yes immediately. So it worked out. And then Zoe Graham, we brought in. She was in Boyhood and Secret in Her Eyes. She's wonderful. She's an Austin actress that I love to death, and brought her in to play kind of the final girl. And then Josephine McAdams, another Austin actor. And then, you know, obviously I think the big surprise was Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask about that, the cameo from him. How did that come about?
Yeah. Joe Bob was, I've just been a diehard Joe Bob fan my entire life. You know, I mean, I would watch his show on Monster Vision, you know, and I mean, I had a Joe Bob hat, and this is before the Shudder stuff. This is before all this stuff happened. I just, you know, was a Joe Bob truther in every way. And I remember one day he followed me back on Twitter, and it was a big day. And, you know, I remember we were writing this, and I was like, you know, we need to have someone who's kind of this horror aficionado. And as a joke, I was like, oh, we should get Joe Bob Briggs. And the problem was people did not know who Joe Bob was. He had been so out of the limelight. Like, this is before this whole resurgence had happened. So I had to explain to a lot of people who Joe Bob Briggs was. And I was like, well, we'll make the jokes so that even if you don't know who he is, the jokes will still land. And then, but I had heard, once we talked to him, he had mentioned that he was talking about doing something with Shudder. And I was like, ooh, this could be really cool. And And I mean, you know, we shot with him, you know, August of 2018. So it's been almost 2 years. So it was before all this stuff had happened. I mean, he was wonderful and just a complete, I mean, you know, he's been a quality actor, you know, he was in Casino, for God's sakes, you know, so I mean, he's worked for Scorsese. I mean, so, you know, Joe Bob knows what he's doing. And, so we knew that, and I didn't want it to be just like a show up for a line. I want him to play a part, you know, and, have like a little mini arc, even if it's short, just to have a little mini arc. And, it was a lot of fun to do, and still kind of surreal to think about.
And that is pretty cool that you give him a little mini arc. Because watching the film, I assumed it was going to be like a couple of lines and then out kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we maximized the time that we had. And we also wanted to set up a story, you know. So I guess folks, you know, this is out before the movie's been out, but folks will see there is kind of like a background story that we set up with Chad's father and trying to find him or whatever. And, you know, there's even hints. I mean, he's got the Joe Bob air freshener and stuff. So like we kind of tease some stuff. I want people to think that he's just a fan, and everything that Chad has is an homage to Joe Bob. So obviously his clothing, yeah. You know, there's stuff that's in his store. There's his sign. That's it's Rad Chad's Horror Emporium. That's outside of his video store. That sign is an exact replica of the style, font, and everything, and the neon of Joe Bob's, you know, Lost Drive-In sign. So, I mean, it's all like an homage to that. So we just wanted people to think it's an homage. And then when he finally shows up, it becomes a pretty great crowd-pleasing moment. And it's been, when audiences, now that I've watched it with a few audiences at festivals, and they don't know it's coming, because we don't tell anybody it's coming, it hits them pretty hard. It's great. It's a lot of fun.
I was, earlier you were saying, like, with the whole anthology thing, you were initially nervous about doing an anthology because you kind of thought it reached like a kind of peak moment. I was wondering also, obviously, your end segment is a parody homage to slashers. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of has an 80s type feel, and there's a lot of things paying tribute to the 80s, both in horror and generally in culture right now. Were you also worried about that, of like being seen as like bandwagon jumping that way as well?
No, you know, I mean, because, so what I was worried about in anthology wasn't necessarily bandwagon jumping. It was more so that I didn't know that we could do this as well as other people had, you know? And I was like, I don't, you know, if we just have to have, one of the rules that I have with my company is we just have to have something unique to say. We can tell any story as long as it's unique. And we have a perspective that we think hasn't been seen before. So, and I haven't seen an anthology like this, you know, and this was different, you know, the things that I loved about Southbound and the way that intertwined, I wanted to take some of that, and the things that I loved about Creepshow and the way the comedy kind of subverted the expectations, I wanted to use that. And then, you know, just like the way that it was balanced in VHS, and they were different lengths and stuff, I wanted to use that. So we took the things that we liked about multiple versions to make this, and but it had to be unique, you know. So and then as far as, you know, the 80s pastiche, I mean, I think that just happened naturally. We did not set out to make a movie about the 80s. I think it was, you know, just being, you know, a lot of us, a lot of the directors are in their 30s, you know, so I think we kind of grew up in that period. You know, so I think that's what we have. This is our love letter to horror. I mean, people say that all the time, but like, this really is, we are all diehard horror fans, like everyone. And I mean, I remember when we brought Baron Vaughn on, you know, who's a big actor, he's in Grace and Frankie, he's the voice of Mystery Science Theater, the Red Robot, and he's done all this stuff. And I was like, look, Baron, it'd be great to have you, but prove to me that you're a horror fan. And then we just started deep diving about everything, and he's talking about his favorite Japanese horror stuff and all these things, and I'm like, okay, cool, you're one of us, because that was a rule, like, you had to, this couldn't have cynicism to it. It had to come from the right place, because it's what I love about Joe Bob Briggs, because he finds the heart in horror and the beauty in horror that others don't. And that's important to me, because I get frustrated when people talk about, you know, that they don't want to call something a horror film. You know, they want to try and say it's just a psychological thriller. And it's like, no, that's a horror film, damn it. You know, like don't be afraid to embrace what it is. And, you know, so that's something that we just wanted to embrace. So the 80s thing just kind of became happenstance, because that happened to be a period that we love. So, and if we come from a place of originality and we come from a place of love, because that's what it is, then it is what it is, you know. We put it out there, and if somebody thinks it's too wink wink or referential, that's fine, you know, but we had fun, and it's a movie that I still, every time we play at a festival, I still watch it at the festival, because I have so much fun watching what my friends have done, and the fact that this weird, wild idea somehow actually came together to be a real movie, and people are laughing, and that's what it's all about. So, yeah.
Do you think that's, I was just thinking that, do you think that's really what it is, what it kind of boils down to, with the kind of 80s love that we're experiencing now? I just realized that, you know, like, I'll turn 35 this year. I know a lot of other horror podcasters seem to be in their mid-30s. I think the people who listen to this generally are in my age bracket, and the people who are making movies now seem to be also in that age bracket. So you think it's that kind of natural kind of thing of like, these are the things we remember as a kid.
Completely. Yeah, completely. I think that's exactly what it is. You know, I mean, that's what, you know, Ross and Matt, you know, in Stranger Things, that's what they did. You know, I remember meeting them at South By. And because I know one of their partners, Leah Janiak, who's an amazing director in her own right, made a movie called Honeymoon. And Honeymoon played the same time Starry Eyes played at South By. And this is before they had pitched, you know, anything Stranger Things. And it was just, you know, this is what they grew up with. You know, this is just what we know. So we're in this period. And I think over these next 5-6 years, you're going to get these people who are in their mid-20s, late-20s, you know, getting to, you know, more mature filmmaker status. Not that anybody in their 20s can be mature now. They are, probably more so than I was. But I know that for myself, I had to reach my 30s in order to know how to do this properly, you know, and know how to make a movie. Not that I even still know how to do it properly, but I'm getting there, you know. And so I think you're, as that happens, you're going to see more of this like 90s and 2000s horror is going to start to kind of come into play. And you're already seeing some 90s pastiche, you know, coming in, sneaking in with shows like Pen 15 and stuff like that that are starting to happen. So, you know, I think it's just natural. I think, you know, we're going to go through these periods, and pretty soon people are going to be making 2010s horror, which I don't even know what that's going to be, but we'll find out, you know, and that will exist. But I think it's completely based on where we're at in our current ages. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely think so. Like, I feel like the things based on like 2010s horror would be like, you know, more arty and psychological. I think like the kind of elevated horror kind of A24 stuff, like I find it more difficult to think about 2000s horror.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So one of the things we're talking about now is to at this point this will be out in June, so there might be something, but we're trying to get a sequel off the ground to Scare Package right now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we're talking about is 90s, and because it happened to be 80s, again, was not the intention, just kind of happened to what we were doing. We definitely now kind of were thinking that the sequel would focus on 90s and 2000s. And one of the ones that I kept going back to was Saw, like as like, oh, there's a lot of stuff in Saw that kind of played around with this. And I was like, well, that's 90s horror. And I was like, no, that's 2000s horror. And I was like, oh, really? And I, for some reason, I just thought Saw was in the 90s, but no, it's early 2000s. And so, yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of those films in that world that we can play with, you know, found footage stuff. So that's what we're talking about potentially in the sequel. So
that's very true. And then I suppose like the 90s is kind of like I suppose Scream's kind of the most, in terms of American horror, it's kind of the most emblematic 90s horror. And, you know, that, then you would come into the issue of trying to out-meta a meta film. It's like, yeah. Meta-cubed or something.
Oh, well, I mean, it's funny. We've had people say that about Scare Package already, because that is what we're doing. You know, there are, I mean, we are referencing Scream in Scare Package, which is, and keep in mind, Scream exists because of what we just talked about, because of this like 80s horror boom that had happened. Yeah. And then Scream existed as a way of commenting on that. And now we're commenting on that commenting, which is there. So if there's any film that's meta enough, we've taken that mantle for sure. I mean, Jesus Christ, you know, so we might go too far with it. I don't know. I will say, if you don't like meta, just don't watch Scare Package, because it'll just annoy you.
Yeah, I know some people are very, anti-meta. I'm totally okay with meta. It entertains me. And yeah, of course, like Chad's like speech in the horror hypothesis is of course riffing on the Scream character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and well, I mean, in that, you know, I picture the scene where, you know, Jamie Kennedy's character's in a video store, like doing this like thing, you know, and like he's not in a video store at that moment, but he's coming from a video store. So I mean, it's all, you know. Anyway, it's all part of that. And look, I think meta, just like horror comedy, can work as long as you are honest about it, and it comes from a place of purity and heart. Because it's the cynicism in horror that really bothers me, because you get people who make fun of horror because they think it's below them. They think it's B-movie, and calling horror B-movie is wrong, in that there's a lot that horror has always had to say, and I think that it gets misunderstood all the time. So I think, you know, where meta and horror comedies in particular have these problems are people that are just doing it and they're coming from the wrong place. and they're coming from a place that doesn't care. Because, you know, we can make fun of it. You know, it's like making fun of yourself and being self-referential. I think that's great. I think that's really funny humor. But anybody that talks to us and knows, and I think if they watch it and they see all the Easter eggs and all the hidden things that we put in this movie, you really start to understand that we're right with you. You know, we made a movie that we wanted to see because we are like real horror fans. And I think that's just really important.
I think it's, yeah, it's one of those things that it can be done well and it can be done very badly. And I think, you know, like you say, when it comes from a place of sincerity, and also when it's just not just, it actually does something with the cliche it's talking about. Because I've seen meta things done before where it's kind of like, ha ha, isn't this so generic? And then, but it's just the generic thing. They're just doing the generic thing and pointing out it's a generic thing. And you're like, yeah, that's not how this works.
No, exactly. That's a great way of putting it. Exactly. And it's not just calling attention to what is a cliche. It's talking about the cliche, understanding what it is, and then subverting that. So saying, we know what your expectation is. We're waving it right here to the audience, sometimes literally waving to the audience. Yeah. And then now we're going to have fun with that because that's what you're used to and that's what we're used to. And now go along for the ride. And I think when you do it from that perspective, it then becomes fun. You know, it's like we're having, it's this, you know, one of the great things about movie going experiences is because it becomes this collaborative thing, you know, like you're responding. We are creating things for the audience to respond to. And we are constantly talking to the audience. In every single movie, you're talking to the audience, every single one. It's just meta kind of does it a little more overtly. And as long as we know, you know that, hey, we're asking you to go along this ride with us, take our hand. It's going to be fun. And wink, wink, you know, and then you're along. And I think that becomes a really enjoyable experience. And, you know, and that's the thing, like we were making this for ourselves. So it's like, is this a movie I would want to go see? And I'm proud to say that I would. So that's how I know we've done something that, something right.
You mentioned you've watched the film a few times at various festivals. It's been touring festivals, and have you had any particular festival highlights, favorite festival? I know you played at Sitges. I know you played at Fright Fest London for their Halloween thing. Were you at those events? And what was the kind of best reactions you got?
I mean, it'll be hard to top our world premiere at Sitges. You know, just going out, we played at the Midnight Extreme. And I remember when we first got the notice, they were like, okay, you're playing at 1 a.m. I'm like, oh God, like who's going to go see this movie at 1 o'clock in the morning? You know, is this really going to work? I had never been to Sitges before. I'd always wanted to go. And we get there and the line is just wrapped around the corner, like all the way down the street. And it just was overwhelming. I mean, it was just every single, you know, blood splatter, they're cheering and clapping. And it just was this, it was amazing. It was amazing. And then the second night we had more people because of word of mouth, and we sold out, which was just amazing. So that was, you know, something I'll never forget, truly. I mean, I kind of want to make a movie for Sitges every year if I can. And then immediately after that, we played Telluride Horror in the US, which is another festival that I love, love, love. And we have a long history with. And what was really great about that one in particular was Joe Bob Briggs was there, but nobody knew Joe Bob Briggs was in the movie. We had not disclosed this. We made sure that no press had come out about it because we wanted there to be a few surprises. By the time at June, it's going to be known. We'll still try and keep it a little low, but nobody knew, but people knew Joe Bob was there. So when Joe Bob Briggs showed up, I mean, the whole crowd, I even recorded it on my phone. I was like holding my phone, like waiting to hear what the crowd was going to do. And they erupted. It was so cool. The same thing happened at Nightmares, but at Telluride Members Fest in Ohio, but Telluride in particular, they erupted. And then we got to bring Joe Bob Briggs on stage to do a Q&A after. He was actually hiding in the balcony watching the movie, which was great because that was the first time he had seen it. And it's funny, like his first like note to me, not note, but his first comment to me was, you know, Aaron, I didn't know what I would think this movie would be, because, you know, you never know what these things are going to be like, but you guys were professional and you really caught me off guard. And he's like, you know, it's actually good. it's actually good. And I'm like, you don't have to keep saying actually, Joe Bob. It's like you did not believe it was going to be good at all, clearly. But I'm glad it's actually good. But that was wonderful. And then, you know, the first film I made was a depressing, you know, psychological horror film dealing with very, very heavy subject matter and topics. And it just was a depressing, it's a downer of a movie. I'm proud of what the movie is. It's not exactly what I wanted, but there's a lot of it that I'm proud about. But watching that movie with an audience was, excuse me, was never the best experience because it's, you know, people are down, you know, and that's what it's supposed to be. This, we made this as a response to that in a way. We wanted to do something fun. And just seeing people like coming back and like, oh, this part, and oh, this part, and they're talking about their favorite things has been the best feeling in the world. I mean, at a festival, we even had, there was a young girl who was probably like 8 or 10 years old. I don't even know, just yay tall. And I was like, oh no, why is she in this movie? Like, come on, parents, you should not be bringing your kids to this movie. Because there's, I mean, it's a comedy, but it's, there's a ton of blood. I mean, it's
yeah.
a ton, as you know, a ton. And I'm like, is this really ideal? And there's some subject matter too that's probably not good. She came out after and then wanted to meet me and was like talking about how it was, her, telling me about her favorite part, which I won't give away because it's at the ending.
Yeah, right.
And all this stuff. And it was just, it was amazing. You know, it was such a cool experience and just seeing everybody's reaction. And now that the trailer's out and seeing all the people who have reacted to the trailer, and it's just been really, really cool. I mean, I think that's what this is all about. Like I said, you know, you're making this for an audience, you know, that's what it's for. That's why we do it. And so I getting that so noticeably audible reaction from people is fuel. It's what makes you just want to do more. And it's why now we just want to keep making Scare Package movies because we had so much fun making it. So
is that what you're, I mean, I know that you're focusing on getting your second full feature, the Pale Door, done, but are you also currently working up ideas for a Scare Package too?
Yeah. We've actually already written the core story. Well, we have the
wraparound's already there.
Yeah. So, I mean, we knew early on we had an idea that of like, what is a sequel? Like, if you're going to do a sequel, like, how do you have to go bigger and crazier in order to do this. So we knew, and we kind of found the things that we loved the most about the first Scare Package so that we know what to lean into. And without giving too much away, it definitely, it's absurd. Like, it takes what we already did and dials it even further. And we're really excited. So yeah, we just got so excited that we just started writing it. And my writing partner Cameron and I. So yeah, we've got that. We even have a logo for it. We've already created some key art for it. Now granted, we don't have it all in the bag yet, and especially with current times and things are still in flux. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see. But you know, fingers crossed that we could do it. But it's pretty ridiculous. But yeah, we've already written the core story, and we've already talked through a couple directors that we wanted to work with before, couldn't work with. So for varying reasons. So now we're trying to bring them in we've already talked with some of them about that. And once we get the funding, then we'll greenlight it. So.
Yeah. I was going to ask that if you had generated a new roster of directors that you wanted, or if you wanted to bring some people back.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few surprises. I don't want to give it away just yet. Cause it's also, who knows if the movie's going to happen. So it's like, I don't get anybody's hopes up, especially even my own hopes up talking about it. But we have, it would generally be new directors, but there's like some surprises within that. And then selfishly, I will direct again because I love it. So I'll be back no matter what. So if we're doing it and I'm making it, I'm going to hire myself to direct a few because it's too much fun not to. But I mean, look, one of the great things in horror is the absurdity of horror sequels. So how to play with that, I think, would be a lot of fun.
It does sound like a lot of fun. I do like a good ridiculous horror sequel.
Yeah.
So you've also been working on The Pale Door. That seems like a very different film, a horror western. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, yes, it's complete opposite of what Scare Package is. It's not a comedy in any way. It's a horror western that we created with Joe and Keith Lansdale. Joe Lansdale, who's one of my favorite, you know, authors, writers of all time. And, you know, he'd written Cold in July and Bubba Hotep and the Happen Leonard series and, you know, The Bottoms and the Drive-In, some of my favorite books, movies, shows, just across the board. And we collaborated with him. I had a story for, you know, just this weird Western. And then I was on a writing panel with Joe and Keith, and we talked about it and then decided to collaborate. And it was a wonderful process. And we wrote this weird movie. And 1 year from the day that we decided to collaborate, we were on set and shooting, and prep to shoot. But it's basically about a group of cowboys who rob a train, and they're expecting to find, you know, kind of their loot to be this thing of gold. And it ends up being that there's a weird masked girl who's been captured, and their leader gets shot, and they have to kind of hold up in this ghost town. And this girl kind of leads them in that direction to tend to their wounded leader. And when they get there, they meet this madame who's running a brothel, and it ends up being a coven of witches, and these cowboys have to survive the night in a, it's pretty crazy and very violent and dark, but it's also a character piece. You know, it's really about two brothers, you know, trying to work through some damage in a relationship. It's a very personal story that I have with my family and my father and my brother. And I'm unbelievably proud about it. And, you know, that'll be coming out later this year as well. But yeah, very, very different film tonally, but, you know, I think is going to surprise some people when it comes out.
Why did you pick a Western? Just out of interest, not a lot of horror Westerns. Obviously last year there was the Wind, and obviously there's Bone Tomahawk and, you know, a couple of things, but not an extensive subgenre.
Well, I mean, that's a big reason why. Because there aren't a lot. So, you know, what I had mentioned earlier was that one of the rules we have is it has to be unique. We have to have a unique story to tell. And it can be something we've seen before, but it has to be told differently. So, you know, that's what we really wanted. This really spawned out of, after I made Camera Obscura, I had pitched, so Universal Pictures is who put that movie out. And I had pitched to them, they had asked me if they had a story about a witch. And this was after Robert Eggers' The Witch had come out, and they were wondering, you know, do I have any witch stories? And I was like, well, I have this, and I just kind of came up with the concept of why not make it, you know, witches in the Wild West, you know, kind of thing. And I think that could be a really cool story. And they were like, no, we just want regular witches. And I'm like, I don't know what regular witches is, but that's fine. And so they passed. And then, but I always had this core concept, you know, about this group of cowboys in this ghost town that's inhabited by a coven of witches. And I'm like, this is just a really cool movie. Like, I just say that, and it's, you know, cowboys and witches and stuff like this is cool. Like, I see it in my head. And so, and then one of the great things I think about Westerns is just, it takes the anti-hero sentiment, I think is, it allows you to take these outlaws, you know, who have trouble trusting themselves, but yet are so loyal to each other at the same time. There's a big familial draw to it in that they're very loyal to their family. They're very loyal to their gang, but then they're also outlaws, you know, and at these times of strife, can you trust each other? And I think that makes for an interesting inner dynamic to explore. And then, Keith Lansdale, who's a full writer on the movie, and Joe was a consultant and an EP with us, but like once they came on board, we were able to really, just the characters, you can just have unique, interesting characters in a gang. You know, you get to create these different voices and how they all kind of, you know, this amalgamation of these odd people that can really make for something a lot of fun. So, you know, it was, we hadn't seen a lot. You know, Emma's film, The Wind, I think is great. Bone Tomahawk is fantastic, one of my favorites. But you're right, there's not a lot of these that are out there. And so we were like, you know, let's capitalize. And now I think you're going to see, there are a number of horror Westerns coming after our film. I like to think that they saw what we did and they copied us, but that's fine. you know, we wanted to do something that was different, you know, and that's what it's about. I mean, in the next movie that we're writing, even right now, on top of Scare Package, the sequel, is, you know, another like weird mashup that I don't think anybody's seen, but I can't say yet. That's another horror like twist. And I think that's going to be something we always try to do, is what are horror movies that have not been done, like weird horror mashups. And we're doing another one now. So, but yeah.
You can't tell us anything about that. We can't worm any information out of you on that one.
Well, okay. I'll just say that the concept is more of it's a horror sports movie. So it's a horror comedy, but done from the perspective of like Rocky or Mighty Ducks or like that kind of world. So, so like, you know, the training montages and the, you know, the big game at the end and the guy that gets hurt and he's got to, you know, all of those cliches, we do as a sports horror comedy, is what we're working on. So,
wow. Yeah. Trying to make calculations in my brain. No, I can't think of anything that would approximate that. No.
Oh, yeah, that's what we love. You know, there's moments, but yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be a lot of fun. Yeah. So
that sounds excellent. And for listeners who want to check out Scare Package, you're going to be on Shudder at the end of June.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love that we're recording this early, but it's coming out in June, so I can actually announce that. You know, we always have to dance around it. So, yeah, when we made this movie, I knew some of the folks at Shudder, and I was like, look, we're making this for Shudder. Like, this is who it's for. This is for the hardcore horror audience. It's for the people that get this. Like, there's so many jokes, you know, that I feel like it just has to play with a horror crowd. This isn't for the mainstream audience. It's just not. It's for diehard horror fans. So Shudder is the only place, like the only place. I didn't want it to go anywhere else. It's what I wanted to do. So we were so excited, and yeah, we made the deal a long time ago. I've been waiting for their window when we're going to release, but June 26th is going to be the release date. And at this point, everybody should know that. There'll be a number of announcements, and I'm doing a lot of fun interviews and podcasts like this one, and where we're talking about it. So yeah, it'll be out. And then The Pale Door will also be out in 2020, but I can't say anything about that just yet. But we do have we have a deal there as well with another company that's really exciting, and that'll happen probably in the fall.
Well, we look forward to checking that out whenever it comes out, whenever you can reveal that. And yeah, you've whetted our appetites for a Scare Package too.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the name is TOO, Too Scared ED, Too Packaged ED. So it's so stupid. It's so stupid.
That seems right on the money. That's just, yep. I'm very much on board. Well, it's been great to have you on the show, Aaron. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing what you do and supporting films like ours and all my friends and stuff as well. So keep doing it. And yeah, thank you so much for having me. We really appreciate it.
That was my guest, Aaron there, who we equally appreciated having on the show. We can also recommend checking out Scare Package when it becomes available on Shudder on June the 18th. Also, as always, I'd like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of the pod, and hope all of you at home are staying safe and well and generally holding up okay, whether you're still in lockdown or you're just coming out of lockdown. I sincerely hope that this episode has brought you just a little bit of light entertainment for the hour that it's been on. If it did, I would also be very grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to us on Spotify, on Stitcher, and on Apple Podcasts. That, sadly, is all for this time, but be sure to join us again next Thursday when we will be starting a brand new bonus series, New Horror Express's Guilty Pleasures. In the first episode of New Horror Express's Guilty Pleasures, me and two co-hosts will be looking at Dracula 2000. So that is sure to be a lot of fun. It's a pretty cheesy movie, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking about it. Also, be sure to join us in 2 weeks' time when we will have another great regular episode of the show where we will be talking to another great guest from the world of indie horror. But until then, see ya!